Welcome back to the Triple Option with RBKD. I'm Rod Babers hanging out with Kevin Dunn and Brad Keltner. It's the Bat Tuesday. We play jams from our sister station, The Bat. I got to tell you, I like the vibe of The Bat Tuesday. All these jams, have they all been from the 80s?
Pretty much.
I think all three today that we've played
this have been one, from the 80s.
This one.
I just like 80s, the feel of 80s music. It's very feel good.
I'm totally with you.
Right? It's very feel good.
Pop this
carefree.
Up. This reminds me of being in Austin.
Fun loving.
80s.
Yeah.
Sister driving down Lamar.
Yeah.
No one was in this town.
No, I agree. Yeah.
I'm on the hunt down after you. And like all 80s songs, it sounds real feel good, and there's a big stalkerish vibe to it.
Hungry.
I'm hunting you down.
Yeah. That's very true.
And he's hungry like the wolf.
He's hungry like the wolf.
Wolves don't do good damage.
No, wolf is always trying to do bad damage.
Yeah.
When's the last, it's true.
When's the last nice wolf?
Not a lot of good wolves.
Talked to a couple of good ones.
What, really?
On Rainy Street at a bar. They were hanging out. They were in from out of town.
Some good wolves?
Good family wolves. Yeah, nice guys, actually.
Oh, they got easy food at Town Lake. They're just hanging with you.
Yeah, they were chilling. They were just having a drink after a nice meal, I think.
Oh,
good dudes, though. A lot of good stories.
Learned that from as a child. All this wolves and all the stories are bad. I was trying to eat the kids and do other stuff.
Yeah. And blowing houses down and all that.
That.
Isn't that the big bad wolf who blew the house down?
It is.
Well done.
Yeah.
Got your facts straight.
Good job on that one.
But it's also, it shows you how incredible dogs are, that transformation and that evolution. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of stuff in between there, but they come from wolves, and dogs are
great,
just so sweet.
No, it's actually one of the man's,
most of them are.
It's one of man's greatest accomplishments.
Yeah.
Domesticating the wolf.
Yeah.
And then breeding different types of dogs into like functional creatures.
Yeah.
I need a dog to herd sheep. I need a dog to fight bulls.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I need a dog to do this. All right, I'm going to breed this kind of dog. It's fascinating. I actually watched a documentary on it, and I'll have to try to remember what it is, but it was all about the domestication of the wolf and then like breeding different dogs for different tasks for men and mankind.
And women.
I said mankind.
Sexist.
I said mankind all throughout the history of civilization. It's unbelievable.
It really is.
It's like, it's probably one of our top 10 greatest accomplishments as men, because it led us to domesticate all types of animals and figuring out how we can use them for different tasks.
And even, you got two domesticated animals on the whole, right, that we have across the world. You got dogs, you got cats. And cats really found humans. The ancient Egyptians in the 14th century, their silos were getting poisoned by rats, and the domesticated cat, or close to it, more of a wild cat, found that, and so they just kind of found each other. We actually did something with the wolves.
That's great. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's great. Awesome.
Got a book on it. I'll bring it in.
Please do.
Yeah.
All right. I'll try to find that documentary.
BK is so bored. We're having our old man
BK
conversation here.
You don't care about this
stuff. Watch 60 Minutes this week?
No. I hit my quota for my life, and that's a one.
All right, let's talk football this weekend. Gentlemen, I saw this on the Texas football Twitter site, and they didn't really specify, so I'll just read the caption. Texas football tweet this out. 100% chance of snowflake emoji this Saturday.
That sounded so old. That was great.
It was a snowflake.
I know. It sounds like something I would have said, though. I
mean, it is a snowflake
kids
emoji.
Kids should say icy.
I know, but we'll interpret that later. I'm giving you the exact reading of the caption, all right? It doesn't say icy. It says snow. It's a snowflake emoji. All right, 100% chance of snowflake emoji this Saturday.
It's going to snow in Austin?
And then the hook 'em hand emoji. There you go. How you like that?
Yeah.
I'm just reading it verbatim. All right, obviously. And then there's a video of Texas in an alternate icy white uniform, like the icy whites they wear on the road. And I guess the assumption is they're going to wear the icy whites this weekend against Baylor at home. That's the assumption. And it's going to be a tribute uniform. Did you say that, BK? Is it a tribute?
They're really poking the bear here with this timing.
So it's not the traditional road whites, the icy whites, the stormtroopers, whatever you want to call it. It's not the uniforms that Texas wore in Lubbock against Texas Tech a few weeks ago. They're a little bit different, right? They're sort of throwback alternates of the white uniforms, and according to Texas football, it is a tribute to the 1970 national championship team. So there are some differences, between the current road whites, the icy whites as they call them, and what they're going to be rocking on Saturday. But yeah, I can't remember the last time they've worn white, like any rendition of white
at
DKR.
At home.
And that's going to apparently happen this week against Baylor.
It's going to – this is the weird thing about it. They know the fan base is right now aggravated, to say the least.
She's upset at you right now. Get home on time tonight.
Right? The fan base is already aggravated. And listen, I've been saying forever, I would love alternate uniforms. And I love these uniforms. And I'm fine with wearing icy whites at home. Hell, I'd wear icy whites as much as you can because they just look really freaking cool. But people want to see their burnt orange at home. And these are there are a lot of traditionalists in our, you know, in our fan base. And I love them all. And they asked CDC about this via Twitter. There's actually Twitter screenshots and snapshots of Twitter CDC responding saying, we'll never wear white uniforms at home. It'll never happen. It's not going to happen. And, well, now it's a tribute uniform, but technically it's still white uniforms at home. And
is Tom Herman going rogue again?
Oh, that would, man. You know what? Maybe Tom Herman is just deciding.
Just screw it. It's our
middle finger.
Room.
Yeah, you know what? Maybe that's what's going on. Maybe you're right.
Where we're playing.
Maybe it's a statement.
Right. We
it's a
should
statement
wear yellow.
To CDC. Could be.
It's a good thing they're not honoring the 1969 national champions, guys.
Nice.
The last all-white
nice.
Team to win a national championship.
Oh.
That would have been the worst bit of all time.
That wouldn't have been good.
When I first saw this, I was like, wait a second, was it 70 or 69? Which
69.
One was it? Which
69.
One was it? And I was like, okay, it is 1969. So that would have been one of the worst
quite,
decisions.
It's quite
of
a feat,
time.
Though.
Good point.
Quite a feat.
Great
yeah.
point,
You can
DK.
Look at that as racist, and I think a lot of us do. I also look back at it and think, well, you got to all white guys to go win a national title.
Yeah, you can work harder or you can work smarter. Go ahead. I think Texas figured that out.
So what do y'all think? Are y'all super passionate about this, right? Because there are Longhorn fans
are
who
some.
Freak out
I'm
about
not,
this type
I don't
of
care
stuff.
About this
whether it's throwbacks, whether it's alternates, whether it's wearing white at home or burnt orange on the road.
Yeah. A one-time deal, no. I mean, I don't like how LSU does that and the Cowboys do that. There are some teams that, pro and college, that they're always wearing their white at home. So you never get to see the other one. I like the purple jersey for LSU. I like the blue jersey more for Dallas. So I wouldn't want it full time, but getting back to Rod's comment on the eyes of Texas, there's so many things that are on my mind with this football team way ahead of what jersey they're going to wear.
Yep.
Just line up correctly.
I wonder if, because based on this little video they posted on the official Texas football Twitter account, there are no names on the back of the player uniform. So I wonder if that's something we're going to have to deal with on Saturday, right? Because normally the Texas uniforms have the names on the back, but I don't think the 1970 uniforms did. So there's one super obvious change, because honestly, from far away, it doesn't look that different than what you normally see
yeah.
in terms of their road white uniforms. But
we haven't added that much to our jerseys.
Yeah, exactly, and which is a good thing. I'm cool with that. But we might not have names this weekend on Saturday, so hopefully it won't be Tim Brando and Tillman on the call, because they couldn't get the names right, even though they were on the back
That'd
of the player
jerseys.
That'd
be a terrible
jerseys.
Idea. Yeah. No names would be a terrible idea. It'd be horrible.
Think so? I mean,
yeah,
there's a lot of teams that still do it, right? Notre Dame still goes with the no names on the back of the uniform. I don't think that's a great bit, honestly.
It sucks.
If it's if it's Nestler, was it Nestler or who was it? No, not Nestler. Who was the guy we had?
Brando,
yeah, Brando. I mean, that could really be trouble.
Yeah.
It's a lot of hard work for those guys coming in, man.
He's calling Chris Adamora in the shotgun. It's like, look, This one, you should be able to differentiate there, Tim.
Another receiving touchdown for Juwan Mitchell.
Juwan Mitchell on a post route.
Unreal. So there's something to watch for. Apparently some new uniforms. I guess we shouldn't call them new, but some alternate slash throwback uniforms that'll be rocked by the Horns this Saturday against Baylor. Speaking of Baylor, guys, that game coming up 2:30 this weekend. Thoughts on this Baylor football team? They're 1-1 on the year. They've had more games canceled than played due to COVID-19 this season. Their one win came against Kansas, 47-14. Mm-hmm. Their loss came in Morgantown against West Virginia, 27-21 in double overtime. A lot of familiarity between these two coaching staffs, right? I think everybody got their fix last year when Texas played LSU with Dave Aranda as the defensive coordinator. We all heard the stories of how Tom Herman and Dave Aranda played college football together way back in the day at Cal Lutheran. So they've known each other for more than two decades. They've apparently kept in touch, and they're still friends and confidants. And also, Baylor's offensive coordinator this year is Larry Fedora,
yeah,
who was on Tom Herman's staff last year. as an offensive analyst. So you've got some familiarity there.
Just change that one.
What one?
Analyst.
Okay.
All right,
we said the same thing. I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay, Trey.
Okay, very confusing there.
I thought you were trying to insinuate that like that's what he contributed basically to the cause.
Oh, that would be
analyzing.
Yeah,
that's what you want to call it.
That's what his job was last year.
No, I'm just saying like that's what kind of job he did. Like it was that bad.
I would say
I wasn't insinuating anything.
I would say they weren't anal and he didn't analyze enough.
Oh, boom, boom. Okay, I gotcha. I was going with
analization.
It was an ish job, so that's why.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying.
Oh, good way. You know what? It works either way. Good job, guys.
Really touring there, guys. Goodness.
Yeah, us.
For Baylor, guys, the biggest issue, at least on paper for this team going into the year, was going to be on defense, right? Only three returning starters from that side of the ball. A ton of guys sent off to the National Football League, but the defense hasn't really been the issue this year. They only gave up 14 to Kansas. They only gave up 14 in regulation to West Virginia. Now, Texas will be their toughest test by far, right? The Longhorns, the number one scoring offense in the country, and to be honest, and Kansas and West Virginia are two of the three worst teams in this conference, in my opinion. So Baylor's done a pretty good job defending against offenses thus far. Now, defending against COVID, well, that's a different story. The problem for Baylor has been its offense, guys. Like, technically, they're tied for 25th in the country in scoring offense. They're technically scoring 34 points per game, which isn't too terrible. But they had two kickoff returns for touchdowns against Kansas, and they only had 14 after regulation against West Virginia. So that stat is a bit skewed. I don't love looking at total offense because yardage is overrated. Ask the Dallas Cowboys. It's all about points. The Baylor Bears are 70th out of 77 teams. They are 70th in college football in total offense in terms of yards per game. And once again, they've played two of the three worst teams in the Big 12, in my opinion. Charlie Brewer was sacked six times against West Virginia. He hasn't looked great. Their leading rusher is only averaging just over 3 yards a carry. It has been a struggle for this Baylor offense. So if there is a game in which the Texas defense can really get some things cooking and get back on track, it could be against this lackluster Baylor offense.
You would think so, and they're still making that adjustment. They did a great job with the personnel they had, Matt Rhule did, in that offense, and it was frustrating the parallels when you looked at what Texas was trying to do, because Matt Rhule, even a couple years ago, when he first got in the Big 12, said, they had mentioned Tom Herman, talked about the power spread. He goes, oh, I like that. I think I'm going to use that. But we just kind
of... Pro spread.
Pro spread,
I was
right?
Interviewing him.
Yeah, it was
said.
You, right?
Yeah,
but he was like, yeah, we're going to do different things, though. So offensively, if Charlie, they got to protect him, and there were already questions about Charlie and his health heading into this year. Bohannon, I've seen him in both games. I think he's only thrown one pass. Offensively, I think you're right. I think this is a week the defense should be able to get back on track. Defensively, Rod, I love Terrell Bernard. He was one of those three guys who was returning this year, and in the two games, he's off to a big start. 3.5 tackles for loss, 2.5 sacks, and leads him in total tackles.
Yeah, I think the familiarity that you talk about, BK, will be on display potentially, and it could be advantageous to either side. I don't know who's going to be able to use the knowledge they have to exploit the other. I'm worried about Dave Aranda's defensive acumen and him being able to teach those corners how to play snug to bump and run coverage on the outside and receivers, take them away because that's what Oklahoma and TCU were able to do. And Oklahoma, I don't know Baylor's corners. They can't be worse than Oklahoma's. I mean, Oklahoma's corners terrible.
They're
so
awful.
If Oklahoma can play bump and run coverage against you, then ipso facto, so can Baylor.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming Baylor's going to try to do that. If they've been watching the film, if they don't do it, then they don't know what the hell they're doing. And they're going to have twists and stunts, a ton of twists and stunts up front with their front seven. And I think Dave Aranda is going to throw that at Texas until they stop it or until they can overcome it. And I don't really know if they have. Now, that's just in the passing game. If Texas can establish a running game, then I think they'd have more balance and they wouldn't have to worry about Dave Aranda's defense teeing off on them with twists and stunts and playing bump and roll on the outside. They'd have more balance. They can use the play action pass, use the RPOs, but they have had no balance. Sam Ellinger is the running game. It's the Sam Ellinger show, and I worry that if Baylor can make you one-dimensional or if you're one-dimensional because all you can do is throw the football, then they can exploit you in those key areas. So that's my concern there. But Sam... You know, Sam will carry the day. Sam will carry you to victory. It just may be a hard fought victory again with Sam Ellinger having to save the day at the end. Hopefully, that's not the case.
Yeah. Did Charlie get a ride here? No.
I don't think so.
Unfortunately.
We're going to hear that a bunch, Sean.
Yes,
I think
they offered him
to play DB. They wanted him to play safety, I believe. So.
Come on, man.
Andre Ware scholarship that we give out every single year. Hey, if you want to watch this game, Pluckers would be a great place to do it. 7 Austin area locations. They're at 75% capacity. That's where we do our game day watch parties in a normal year. And it's just a great spot to be. If you're not going to be at the game, be at Pluckers. Enjoy the best wings in town. Enjoy some drinks and do it with Texas fans as they're playing Texas Fight after hopefully a lot of scores. You can get to pluckers.com to find locations. If you want to order and go pick it up, it's very organized. They have contactless delivery. All 3 of us have done that, and we've all given a thumbs up just how organized it really was. So you can do that too and bring it back home. Don't forget, we got Beat the Pluck coming up this Thursday. I've beaten Dave 5 weeks in a row. That means that we give out 10 gift cards each week if I win. All you got to do is get to hornfm.com to sign up to become a wingman. It's pluckers.com. Pluckers, if you don't like our wings, they'll give you the bird.
We got to play this drop for Dave Paul when he jumps on the program on Thursday.
Not 2, not 3, not 4, not 5.
That's what it's turning into.
But I lived up to it.
You actually did, unlike LeBron.
Yeah.
LeBron only got 2 in Miami.
What a loser.
What a loser.
Oh, that is great. Here is Tom Herman, guys. I want to play this quick cut of audio talking about Baylor, right? And no, we haven't seen a lot from this Baylor football team. The Longhorns have played 4 games. Baylor's only played 2. They've had a couple of weeks off due to all the COVID outbreak that they've had within that football program. So Tom Herman was asked, you know, is it kind of difficult to scout Baylor because they've only played 2 games? Here's what he had to say.
Really hard. I think a little bit easier because we've got film on Coach Roberts from his time at Louisiana. Obviously different personnel, different league, different length of time to implement those schemes. You know, Dave is and Coach Roberts are going through the same growing pains that we are, not just being a new head coach, but installing a brand new scheme. I mean, this is completely different than what they did defensively last year. And with no spring practice, much like us, with no spring practice, no summer training, and a very unique and truncated training camp, it's proved to be very, very difficult. And so we have watched the 2 games on Baylor, and defensively we've watched the Louisiana defense for the last year or two. Now with Larry hadn't called a play in about 15 years. You know, Larry's been a head coach for a long time. So we have watched a little bit of North Carolina, but again, Larry wasn't calling the plays there. So that's a little bit more of a difficult task to try to predict beyond 2 games what their offensive tendencies are.
It sounds like a whole lot of confidence from Tom Herman. In terms of scouting this Baylor team, Katie?
No, we talked to Katie, who went out with him in 8th grade, just to get tendencies and emotional balance, kind of where's that at. You know, what sets him off? Really, what tees this guy off? And I didn't get that when he worked here. Yeah, when I heard that, it just felt like they don't really know what to scout here. And that's going to be even tougher, Rod, with the 2 games. So we kind of gave you a little stats there. There's not tons of stats, not enough data to really – to take anything off. Mm-hmm. Plus, you don't know personnel-wise who's going to actually be there.
Oh, yeah, because of the COVID issues that they got going on. If you're in Texas, it's slim pickings. You have to do a really good job. You're essentially going to be dealing with a very small sample size, and you're going to have to extrapolate what tendencies and trends may be based on, and he said, getting film from Coach Roberts from his time at Louisiana. And, Dave Aranda, I mean, he's got a certain, a certain base philosophy, things he believes in. Tom Herman actually should know that based on their relationship. And as you talked about, BK, that familiarity. So, you almost want to have a game plan based on, countering what their base philosophy is, the things that they believe in, they hang their hat on. They're going to come out there and try to execute every game. They're going to do certain things. Now, you only got 2 of those games, and he's a brand-new head coach. But I think ultimately if Texas can establish some kind of running game, I'm in my opinion, I'm confident that that will balance out, and then you'll be able to have a passing game based off the play action and them bringing their safeties in the box. If you can't establish a running game and you're one-dimensional, man, you might be in for a long day.
Yeah. That could be a problem.
That could be a problem.
And Baylor's defense has been pretty good. I thought it was weird, though, because Larry Fedora I mean, was at UNC for a decade plus, and he had many different offensive coordinators, but it was always his offense that they were running. Right? That's what we talk about with Tom Herman here. Like, it's still Tom Herman's offense, even though Yursich is just calling the plays now. That's what UNC was for a long, long time. So I think there's plenty you could gather off film from what Carolina did with Larry Fedora there.
But you should already know that. You've talked to this guy. He's been in your building. You know what kind of concepts he wants to run. It's about how does it match their personnel right now.
Yeah. I think they ultimately, this could be, it's going to be an advantage either way. And I think it'll ultimately be an advantage for Baylor. Not that Baylor has that much of a better coaching staff, but Texas coaches haven't done a really good job evaluating their own talent, making halftime adjustments.
Right.
We talk about self-scouting, long-term systemic issues. They don't do a good job of that. So
They're also predictable.
And they're predictable. So throwing all that out there and then having this small sample size to scout, I think it'll be that's an advantage for Baylor. But doesn't mean it's the advantage that'll determine who's going to win the game. I think it's just a small advantage for Baylor. But Texas has plenty of advantages on their own right, most of it being personnel and talent overall.
Right. I still think Texas will win.
Yeah,
now,
Texas
in terms
wins.
Of your cousin, you may want to take a look at that familiarity a little bit more.
Tom Herman, 4-9-1 with two outright losses when he is favored by a touchdown or more in Big 12 play. Great stat from Jeff Howe. He always brings it up. But it's now burned in my brain. Because every time I want to jump on the bandwagon and go, well, they're favored by double digits. Like, no, I don't see it enthusiasm. I'm like, well, they're favored by double digits.
Yeah.
That's not good.
Be wary. Yeah, exactly.
Not good.
Be wary.
Well, Tom Herman may be at the end of his run here as a Texas coach. We'll have to wait and see on that and see how they play this Saturday. A guy who's definitely at the end of his run and had a lot more success during his tenure in L.A. is Clayton Kershaw. Clayton Kershaw gets the ball tonight. He's at the very end of his career, not sure how many years left. He's had a nice little rebound this year, but he's not been the same pitcher in the postseason as he's been in the regular season. Some of that is exaggerated a little bit. We're going to break it down and get into some of the numbers and why he hasn't been the same guy when it comes to the postseason. Up next in One and Done.
Like that five-star recruit at Kentucky, he's been here and he's gonna stay here. It's One and Done time. Here's Kevin Dunn.
Game one of the World Series, Dodgers, Tampa Bay tonight. 7:11, 7:12, first pitch around there. I like how they always give a real exact time, right? Yeah, it's gonna start at 7 o'clock, but we think the first pitch is gonna be at 7:12. 28 seconds.
7:13.
We gambling on this? Okay.
I appreciate them doing that.
Because you know at that point?
Yeah. Because usually, like, for regular season games, they'll just say it starts at 7 or 7:05. But they'll never end up actually starting at that time. Like, the only sport that does a good job of starting on time is NFL football.
Yeah.
Because every Sunday right at noon, everybody's kicking off. But every other sport, it's like 10 to 15 minutes after the broadcast starts. That's when they finally start the game.
Except for the Super Bowl. The NFL, the Super Bowl is always weird. So it'll start at 7:30, and it's like actually started
8:10.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, what the hell, man?
Kick this thing off, Mom. We actually have to get up tomorrow and talk about this. So the one of Texas's own, Clayton Kershaw from Highland Park, is going to be starting for the Dodgers. You may not even know he's from Highland Park because, well, he's just been that good of an NFL pitcher. Signed at Texas A&M, so he does have that going against him. But it didn't matter because he was a 7th overall pick in 2006, and he's been lights out for them. He's won 3 Cy Youngs. He's won multiple ERA titles, and he has just been a beast. You can argue he's been the best pitcher in baseball in his generation. He's been that good. Let me give you his stats here. He's 175-76. More importantly, he's got a 2.43 ERA in 354 games that he has started. His whip is at 1. This guy has just been, and those are his career stats for about 13 years now. This guy has been that dominant. And in the regular season, especially for the majority of his career, guys, he was throwing 95, 96 with a 4-seam fastball, and he's got a big-time slider and curveball, which is more of a 12-6 to go off of it. BK, it's almost like you couldn't create a better pitcher than what Clayton Kershaw has been in the regular season.
Yeah, he's been spectacular. His career has been nothing short of magnificent. One of the best pitchers of this generation. One of the best pitchers of all time,
yeah.
Honestly. The longevity of this run and just the consistency of this run has been pretty incredible. But I know you're about to get to the huge butt.
Yeah.
The Cardi B size, Kim Kardashian
Nicki
size.
Nicki Minaj, Stoney Clark size. But
I don't know if Rod B's ever thrown that one.
He's
in
never
there.
Thrown Stoney in there.
No, I didn't know
he doesn't want us to visualize.
I'm sure he's got a big butt. But,
I don't think Rod B ever is going to throw that one in.
No. Yeah, I don't think he should.
No.
But yeah, there's a butt.
The visual.
There's a butt for Clayton Kershaw.
There's a big butt, and he's 11-12. So the 2.43 ERA in the regular season, 4.31 ERA in the postseason, and it's become fashionable. You guys know this. Lazy takes are really easy to come by when you don't really look at everything. Mm. And some of the stuff that Clayton Kershaw has just been abominable in the postseason. Well, look, he hasn't been the same guy, so I'm not going to argue that he has. But also, when you kind of get through the fine lines of it, there are some reasons for that. His home run rate definitely has been up in the postseason. It's 0.7 in the regular season, 1.4 in those postseason starts. And he's thrown a bunch of innings. So there's enough data right now to look at that and say, okay, well, why is he giving up more home runs in the postseason? The easy answer? Well, there's better hitters.
That's true.
That's why they're in the postseason. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, these guys, you're going to be facing better competition once you get there. And I also don't think that he just beat up on the NL West or beat up on bad teams in the regular season. He was that good. He had some bad luck, too. So the home runs, we saw that more in 2009 when the Phillies really shelled them. They scored 5 runs in 4 2/3 innings, and a big blow was a 3-run home run by Carlos Ruiz in that 5th inning. He's also dominated some games in the postseason where you look and go, that's the Clayton Kershaw we're expecting. I mentioned the 11 wins he has, 11-12. He dominated the Braves in 2013 and was big time. He then in 2013 really struggled against the Cardinals. We're talking about a 2-week difference, so it's not like there was a blister. It's not like he wasn't feeling it. He had been pitching really well against the Braves in 2013, and then October 18th, about 2 weeks later, he lasted just 4 innings against the Cardinals and got bombed. 7 runs on 10 hits. Some of that was home runs. Some of it, too, is leaving him in too long.
Yeah.
And, Rod, that's where the analytics really hadn't kicked in yet. And the old school baseball thought was, well, if this guy's the next Sandy Koufax and this guy's the best pitcher in the game and he's third way through the lineup, we got to keep him in, right?
Let him go prove it.
Let him go prove it. Let him go earn his money. And so I looked at the numbers of Clayton Kershaw during all of his regular season starts. If the third time in the order, the third time in that lineup where you kind of get to that sixth and seventh inning where he's really been giving up some stuff in the postseason, if that was the same problem in the regular season. People have hit .222 off him in the regular season the third time through the lineup. It's not like they're seeing anything and all of a sudden they're crushing it. A lot of times you'll see that number jump from .220 the first couple times around to .250 or .260 the third time. And you go, okay, that's a marker. Yeah. That's an indicator telling me that for whatever reason your stuff doesn't play that third time around. They get a better look at you. Mm-hmm. They get a better feel. And they kind of know where that slider is going to be or where that curveball is going to be. There's really, as I got to a conclusion on this, there isn't one answer. The home runs have gone up. He has been left in there a little bit too long by managers. And he's also had some runners that were not stranded by their bullpen. He's had some really good starts in the postseason where even if you look at the runs, you would say, well, he gave up 4 or 5 earned runs. That's not a quality start. Well, yeah, but there were 2 ducks on the pond. And when he got pulled after 6 2/3, and that would have only been 2 runs on Kershaw, but 2 or 3 runs came around. Mm-hmm. So that ends up getting added to his bill later on. Guys, he doesn't have the same stuff that he used to. He's a no-doubt first ballot Hall of Famer, but he's been really good this year. And so the velocity has ticked down the last couple years where it's not that 95, 96 to play off that slider and curveball.
Yeah.
But, man, he still knows how to pitch.
Mm-hmm.
And he changes eye levels. He goes in. He goes out. He kind of has a feel for what you're guessing for, and he knows where to go when you're not looking for it. This is a big start for him because the stuff's not the same. But Clayton Kershaw, I know he's a team guy, but for all of us that are kind of looking at his legacy, adding that one ring would be big. And if he does it without his best stuff, and is able to give them 2 really good starts in this World Series, it's going to change how we look at him all time.
Yeah, that's it. It's not just the ring, right? He has to perform well in this World Series, I think, for the playoff Kershaw narrative to really go away. And I think you kind of have to get smarter if you're going to prolong your career and be really good over a really long period of time. Like, as you lose your physical abilities, you've got to improve your mental abilities. And you talked about him kind of learning how to pitch a little bit more and being super smart on the mound. If you don't evolve mentally, then you're going to falter because you lose your physical abilities. So the best in any sport, they figure out a way to do that, sort of revolutionize their game. You could probably make cross-sport comparisons to all sports in that regard. But Clayton Kershaw has done a magnificent job of that. And yeah, this is a massive, massive World Series for his legacy. I mean, he's in the Hall of Fame altogether, but there's no doubt he wants to put some of those jokes to bed, right? The playoff Kershaw jokes, the hashtags, all the doubters that have been coming his way for a decade plus now. He's ready to shut all the doubters up, and he can do that with a good week of pitching.
Has he struggled every postseason?
So that's the thing. It's funny. No, there were two I looked in where I thought,
where
those were just expectations.
Or just a drop off from his regular season production. Is it always a drop off?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not good
for
the legacy.
He's had really good starts, like you
he's
said.
He's had really
KD,
good starts, but it's never consistent all the way through. Now,
he's never had a great postseason where it's like every start he's going to deliver.
He hasn't had what we saw last year from Strasburg. Where whatever that was, it's like he had six starts and he was 5-0 with a 1.92 ERA.
Yeah, you'd like for an all-time great to in the postseason to be able to play at the same level they played in the regular season, or to even take it up a notch.
Yes.
Right? That's how you know you become goat-ish, right? And you know, all the all-time greats, that's usually their legacy, is that when they go into postseason, they're just as good or better than everybody else because the competition level is higher. They usually drop off, the Jags and the Jabronis. Yeah, he's great, but I don't know if you can say GOAT if you never get it done in the postseason. You can just be great, can't be GOAT.
It's the one thing he's missing, and he knows it too. I mean, you can hear him answering questions. He's a real class guy. He and his wife have done incredible work for sex trafficking, opposing it, BK, across the
That's
world.
Fantastic. That's amazing.
Yeah, no, they are, and they put their money where their mouth is, man. The effort and the money that they've donated to try and stop something that's that horrible, and it doesn't necessarily obviously affect their realm or their life.
I've never heard that.
He's a fantastic guy, but you can hear it when he's answering questions. He knows it. He's not trying to avoid it. He doesn't want to highlight it, but he understands how big tonight is.
It irks him.
It does. There's it no definitely
should.
Irks him.
If it
yeah.
doesn't, yeah. Yeah. Got a problem.
Who'd you rather have on the mound tonight, KD? Tyler Glasnow is going for the Rays. He hasn't had a great postseason either, but he's got better stuff, right? A lot more. I mean, he hits 100 with his fastball these days. So if you could pick the starting pitcher in game one, who are you going with?
Tyler Glasnow.
Really?
I didn't have to think about that very much. I'm sorry. I'm one of those stuff guys. You know, I'm one of those.
That's fair.
Give me 100 with some movement and a hook on top of it.
That's the proof right there, Rodby, that playoff Kershaw is a real thing. Right? We're talking about a three-time Cy Young winner. KD doesn't even hesitate. No, give me the other guy.
Wow.
He's really good. But, you know, it's like, despite that he's going to the Hall, I'd rather have the different dude.
And let's not forget about the back injury, too. He's been having back spasms the last couple of years. He was pulled or scratched from a start because of back issues. So we'll see how all that plays into it. But, man, when he was 96, 97, and he would elevate, and then the over-the-top 12-6 curve with a nasty slider, which was essentially his cutter to keep people straight off the straight fastball. I haven't seen many better in my lifetime.
It's amazing.
Game one tonight, a little after 7 o'clock, the Rays and the Dodgers up at the Gilf in Arlington.
When's your game? Saturday?
Saturday.
And Craig going to this game?
Craig's going tonight.
I think Craig's going tonight,
Craig's going to this game.
Chose a playoff Kershaw game. Interesting choice, Craig. Interesting choice.
As a Dodgers fan, we know because maybe he wants the history. Maybe he believes that mojo at one
there
point, it's got to switch. You can't a guy that good can't continue to have bad postings. At one point, just out of the odds alone, it's going to flip. He's going to have a great one, and maybe this is the great one.
Maybe this is it.
Hey,
this is
it. If he's up in the sixth, pull him. Like, don't let him go too long. BK, I know you were talking with Dave a little bit when I was finishing up the one and done, but that's been part of the problems is that if you look at some of the starts, he actually would have had a real good quality start, but they didn't pull him in time.
Yeah, he got worse after that sixth inning or something.
Right, and it's third time around. These guys are good hitters.
No doubt. Good stuff. One and done. Yeah. Talking some baseball. It is the triple option with RBKD. We've got Kevin Dunn. We've got Rod Babers. We've got BK with y'all on a Tuesday. Let's go off the record. I think Texas fans might have a new most hated person. It's not Tom Herman. somebody else. I'll tell you who next.
DD Mega Doodoo. I'm sorry, Mangoodoo.
Once it's turned on, the sign will spell out Deli Cat Essen.
Well, I don't get a brain bag comb.
Well, congratulations. Continue good sex in the Big East.
Thank you, Jimmy.
And boom goes the dynamite.
It's time for another edition of Off the Record.
Do it live. I'll write it and we'll do it live. And thing sucks.
Off the Record time. Here on the Triple Option with RBKD. Alongside Rod Babers and Kevin Dunn, I'm BK Brad Kellner. We've got two off-the-record stories today. Our second off-the-record will come up at 5:45, in which we'll tell you the story about Matthew McConaughey's father and how he apparently lost his life in the most Matthew McConaughey father way possible.
All right.
It's a pretty good one coming up in about an hour. We'll get back into some Dallas Cowboys conversation in about 10 minutes. But guys, our first off-the-record story today, we go back in time. Gonna go back in time.
Why do you have an accent?
That's Back to the Future.
But the guy
didn't have an accent.
Yeah. you're back in time. Why'd you have an accent?
I'm not sure. I didn't even realize I had an accent. Thank y'all for calling me out on that one. We go to January 1st, 2019, which was a very good day for Texas football. That was the date of the Sugar Bowl in New Orleans when Texas defeated Georgia 28-21 to get its 10th win of the season, its first major bowl victory in nearly a decade.
How smashed did you get that night?
Not smashed.
Yeah. I mean, it's New Orleans. Not smashed. Your age, New Orleans, that game. I'm not judging.
Well, I was definitely more smashed the night before, like New Year's Eve.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And I am very grateful that the Sugar Bowl didn't kick off until like 8 o'clock. It was a super late kick on January 1st because it was the last of the New Year's Six games. So thankfully I was able to sober up for the pregame show and be fine by game time. There was some celebrating going on after the win. So that was a good day. We all remember that game. And another thing we all remember from that day and that game actually took place on the field before the game. And that was the incident between Bevo 15 and Uga 10. I don't really think I have to describe the situation, right?
Uga.
Bevo breaking through his barricaded stanchion and nearly spearing the Georgia Bulldog live mascot on the field of the Mercedes-Benz Superdome before the game. It was a near tragedy, right? It turned out to be a laughable matter. It was really funny. It was a great video.
What would the tragedy be?
Thankfully, Uga was okay. Yeah.
Uga, okay. Hmm.
Oh, my dude.
Oh, yeah.
They shouldn't have played the game. If Bevo speared Uga and Uga died, game's off. You can't play it. Like, unless it's a playoff game, you're not playing that football game. That's too big of an incident right there.
Yeah.
So that would have been like a defining moment in sports history.
Yeah,
and honestly, it might have led to the removal of live mascots altogether.
I think it could have.
Like, not just
that.
Bevo.
Yeah.
Like, not just deadly big mascots. Like, all live mascots might have been toast.
And Uga is such a lovable little dog. I mean, dog. You know what I mean? Yeah, helpless. Yeah. We all love dogs.
Bevo would have come through there and done something. Yeah, that wouldn't have been good.
And we couldn't have got into the history of it. Well, the reason bulldogs are with bull baiting,
no,
we don't care.
We
saw
that.
The visual, you know.
And then
still one of the coolest pregame things I've ever seen in any sport ever.
And thank God for that brave silver spur, the one that grabbed the horn. If he didn't turn him, that could have been
ugly. That kid had some farm experience somewhere.
Guy deserves a medal of honor.
He deserves something
ridiculous. Well, we kind of thought that was the end of the story, right? And it's just a fun video we can go back and watch from time to time. But the story has a new chapter, gentlemen.
Yes, it does.
A former Austin American Statesman photographer has filed a lawsuit against the owners and handlers of Bevo 15 for negligence that caused, quote-unquote, permanent injury when the Longhorn steer surged from his holding pen at the 2019 Sugar Bowl.
Yeah. Isn't this kind of late? A year?
Almost. Coming up on 2 years, right? So January 1st, 2019.
Right. Yeah, 2 years. I'm sorry. You're right. 2 years.
So it was a petition that was filed in Travis County District Court last Friday. Nick Wagner is the photographer, former Statesman photographer.
I used to follow that guy.
And he was there. He was taking pictures of Uga 10 right around the scene when Bevo broke through his pin, and Bevo actually kind of speared Nick Wagner's back with the steer.
And which can be incredibly dangerous. Thank God he was all right.
Right.
And smiling after.
So, yeah, there's a picture that went out with a red mark on Nick Wagner's back, and it looks like he's smiling. But he was right in front of the portable railing where Bevo was behind, and Bevo, of course, rammed his longhorns through the stanchion and actually hit the plaintiff's back a couple of times. Wagner's attorney, John Powell, said in a recent interview that Wagner has more than $24,000 in medical bills from therapy sessions.
Wow.
And the statesman reviewed medical documents showing that Wagner had loss of motion and impairment in two areas of his spine.
Okay, so let's get that straight, too. The therapy you're talking about is physical rehab, not I was so emotionally distressed that I had to go talk to a shrink.
Doesn't say.
Okay.
In this article, it just says from therapy sessions. And the statesman reviewed medical documents showing that Wagner had loss of motion and impairment in two areas of his spine. So maybe that means it was more physical therapy than emotional, traumatic type of therapy. Mm. So that happened, guys.
I keep on seeing bulls in my dreams.
And a lot of folks weren't too happy, right? I saw an initial tweet around 8:30 during the Cowboys game last night, and a lot of Longhorn fans were a little bit upset, saying what you said, KD. You know, there's a picture of the guy
smiling
about the incident. He actually came out after the game and said, I'm going to show Bevo more respect in the future. And he was kind of laughing about the incident at the time. I actually acknowledged on Twitter last night. So right after I saw this tweet from Ken Herman, who I had the first tweet I saw, who works for the Austin American-Statesman. He's a columnist there. He basically
it's tweeted. Tom's brother, right?
He tweeted about this lawsuit happening. It's actually a burner account for Tom Herman. He tweeted about this lawsuit happening. And the first thing I did, I went full investigative reporter. And I looked up Nick Wagner's Twitter account just to like see what he had going on in his life, because I knew he wasn't working for the Statesman anymore. And the dude's cover photo was a picture of Bevo. So I don't think he could have been that upset or that distraught by getting speared by Bevo 2 years ago, considering his Twitter cover photo was a picture of Bevo.
Yeah, he's like, that's not Bevo's fault. He's blaming. He's like, it's the people that are in charge of, you know, responsible for Bevo. It's
you can't sue a steer.
You can't.
Yeah. So he's like,
It
sounds like this guy would try. Also, Longhorn fans have pointed out on his LinkedIn page, I mean, Longhorn fans, stay active, man. If you come after Bevo, you come after the mascot, we're going to come after you. Some of his hobbies are staying busy raising his Dalmatian pup, also riding his motorcycle, which as a guy who has a motorcycle license, you can't really do that with a bad back. That could cause some problems. It's not good for your spine to be in that posture if you've got some serious back issues. So I don't know what's going to happen here. It's a lawsuit, right? Total speculation for me, but this feels like a money-grabbing opportunity.
Yep.
And the guy's a photographer. They don't make a whole lot of money. They don't make nearly enough money. I'm not taking a shot at photographers. That's kind of taking a shot at the industry in general. Someone probably told him, hey, dude, you've got a chance to make some real money off this thing, so let's go ahead and sue and see what happens.
They're loaded, right? And I'm not sure if the owners of Bevo are loaded. We've seen some stories on them. But, yeah, BK, I mean, it's, you know, if he had real physical harm, I hate to come out here on radio and call it BS, but it does smell and stink of a money grab.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it would have happened sooner.
That's part of the stink.
Maybe the medical bills didn't start adding up till later. Mm-hmm. I have no idea.
Yeah. I mean, that can't happen, right? Yeah. You get hurt at the time of an incident, and you don't feel the ramifications of that injury until months, years, decades after.
The
right?
Adrenaline.
That is a legitimate thing. I am skeptical. We'll obviously see how this thing plays out in the court of law.
Man.
But a former Austin American Statesman photographer has filed a lawsuit against the owners and handlers of Bevo. So the handlers would be the Silver Spurs organization at the University of Texas. Bevo's owners, John and Betty Baker, who are named as defendants in this case, along with the Silver Spurs Alumni Association.
I wonder when he stopped working for the Statesman. That's big, too.
Because
he probably didn't sue until he stopped working for the Statesman.
Right. Yeah, I know. That's a good point.
Why it took so long.
Yeah,
it does kind of add to the comedy if you're looking at it from outside of our realm of UT right now, and that is, I mean, you know, everything that's going on. It feels like the Dumb and Dumber line, you know, our, you know, our pets' heads are falling off. Like Bebo's getting sued.
It's
Bebo's
surreal.
Getting sued.
Feels that way.
A lot of interesting looks surrounding this football program, yeah. Surrounding this university right now.
What are you going to do with that, Urban?
Yeah, no kid. So there you go. There's your off-the-record story for a Tuesday. It's the triple option with RBKD. Let's talk the Cowboys. Let's talk some Dallas Cowboys football. That'll make us feel better. What the hell happened on Monday Night Football last night, and where do the Cowboys go from here, we discuss.